podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson with Fouad Hassan, Kieran Molyneux and Ian Ryan, being produced by Andy Heaton. To come, there will be clips from our interviews with Jurgen Klopp, Kostas Tsimikas and Billy Hogan. For the full thing of any of them, download the Anfield Wrap app in all the obvious places. Also, quick shout out to anyone who came to see us in London, Singapore or Bangkok. It is absolutely mad, as far as I'm concerned, in my mind, that it's still only about 8.5 days since I was on stage in London. And everything that's gone on since then is absolutely crazy. But it is obviously a privilege and a pleasure to be able to do all of those things, so everyone who came honestly could not appreciate it more. We will go through on this show, we'll have a chat about the centre-halves, because there's an excellent interview by Ian Doyle of The Echo with Joe Gomez. Ben Davies has gone as well, and then we'll have a chat about what is up for grabs over the whole of the season and what we've already seen from pre-season in the context of that. But we'll start off with the centre-halves, and Ian Ryan, it's on the one hand, the Ben Davies going thing is, it's good business. It shows the club can do good business, because he's a footballer who hasn't kicked a ball for Liverpool, and Liverpool have been able to make substantially more money than they laid out on him. So we've got to acknowledge that. We've got to say that that's the case. For me, though, I've always got a bit of a thing that I like it for any footballer who gets the opportunity to come to Liverpool at any age, that they find it a positive experience. I just sort of struggle with that a tiny little bit on this one. I'm not in a moody sense. I don't think anyone's done anything wrong. You know, I'm not having a go anywhere. But it is just a little bit of a shame that this lad gets his dream move, goes through all the media stuff, and we don't even see him kick a ball once, I think, even in a pre-season game for us, if I'm right.
Yeah, I suppose from that aspect, it does feel like a little bit of a shame. But I suppose from his point of view, I think he had options at the time. So when Liverpool come in, I think he could have gone to Celtic. I think that was quite far down the line. Yeah. But obviously he chooses to make the move to us, and I'm sure he backed himself. And he knew Liverpool had problems in the centre-half area, because obviously we'd suffered injuries. So I think we were in a state of panic maybe a little bit. We had to get bodies through the door, and obviously it was getting towards the end of the window at the time. So whilst he's not had an opportunity, Neil, in terms of getting on the pitch in a competitive game, his opportunity will have come on the training pitch. And obviously Liverpool have assessed him and looked at him closely, I'm sure, and felt that he's not quite up to the job, which is unfortunate. But, you know, as you said at the very start of this, you know, Liverpool's job is not to make Ben Davies feel good about himself. It's about, you know, getting points and you know, making profits on signings as well. And they've done that in a really kind of, again, really slick way. So, yes, while I understand the point, you know, at the end of the day, it's a ruthless business. And, you know, we'll have had his opportunities in training. Obviously, Jürgen won't have seen what he was wanting to see, and therefore, he's not been able to manage to start.
He's not got there, and that does happen. It's a ruthless business, football, from time to time. That does happen. For me, it's fascinating that you think all the way back at it, even not dissimilar to me being in London the other week. It's not that long ago. We're talking here about January 2021, yeah, when he comes in and when Kabak comes in. Kabak's still now back on Schalke's books. Norwich haven't picked him up full time. Davies is back there. And when you compare that was what we had to do then, to this set of centre-half options we've got now, all four of them, it could not be further apart, could it? And that shows Liverpool did have a plan. They had a sense of what it was they were trying to do. And obviously they've had a bit of luck with the fitness of the players too.
I think the plan all along with Ben Davies was an investment, to be honest. I think it was a real, like, sort of emergency, given what happened that season with the amount of centre-halves we were losing, as you said. Bodies through the door was key. I personally didn't expect him to have a big Liverpool career anyway at any point in this, and I think he knew that. I think he made that signing he signed for Liverpool because he knows that the next club that comes in, I'm going to look at the fact that he's been training with Van Dijk for the past 12-18 months, as you said, in training is where he's had a chance to prove it, and Liverpool will have his statistics, his data, everything that he's been doing in training and pre-seasons and stuff. And if he's not fit for Liverpool, then the next best option is making money on him and moving him on.
That's what's happened. As I said before, Kabak back at Schalke. Joe Gomez has given this really interesting interview in The Echo, where he's talking about, you know, the opportunities he's got, where that sort of situation is with Matip, with Konate himself. It's interesting, he almost classes Van Dijk apart, I think, as we all do in there. He uses that language himself. But yeah, Kabak, Schalke now back in the Bundesliga. Davies now over at Rangers, Fouad. You know, Liverpool knew they wanted Konate, and he's been the one who's been working with Van Dijk predominantly in pre-season in terms of what we've seen on the pitch. as I say, it shows that they had a plan, but it also shows how extreme those circumstances were back in January 2021.
Yeah, and I think with hindsight, it just gets more and more extreme because you look at what a fully fit Liverpool centre-half kind of area looks like, and you can't believe some of the names that were having to play in that position back then. And I think the Davis one now seems more and more of almost of a thing of, you know, the manager almost protecting some of the younger players, because we were literally getting to that stage where, you know, if there were any more injuries, actual kids would have had to come and play. And I think he drew the line at Reece Williams in terms of how young, how inexperienced we go in terms of bringing these players out from the academy and throwing them into situations. Because he's always talked about that with young players, you know, about protecting them, about bringing them in at the right time. And if you're forced to do it, then it gives them even more pressure. But also, you know, you as the manager have that responsibility. And I think this signing clearly shows now, I think, that he was probably brought in just to ease that burden on bringing in a youngster,
and maybe
potentially causing
to an extent
issues.
Just to do the training sessions.
Exactly.
Literally put bodies on the training field, like, instead of playing goalkeepers at centre-half and training matches and stuff.
Exactly, so the forwards can actually play against defenders and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it makes all the sense now, and you're not surprised they make a profit because, you know, as soon as Liverpool sign someone, you know, eyebrows are raised at who that player is, especially with the reputation they got nowadays.
So it was Kabak, Davis, Williams and Phillips. Phillips is linked away. Liverpool still looking to push for 15 million for him, according to Neil Jones on goal, Ian. Williams, Neil also says Liverpool looking to move into a championship club. Davis has gone, and obviously Kabak was only ever a loanee. He'd gone back to Schalke, then to Norwich, back at Schalke again. Schalke playing Bundesliga football this year, by the way, so it'll be interesting just from the fact that we've met him once, almost in a way, to see what happens. But it's telling, isn't it, that all of these footballers, Liverpool's ideal is none of them are on Liverpool's books going into next season.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever looked at any of them and thought they're going to have extensive Liverpool careers. I mean, Nat Phillips, I think everyone around the table will be grateful for what he did at the time of need. Essentially, you know, he came in and he got everything out of his ability and out of his body that he could, because it was desperate times. And he probably does better than okay, considering, because I'm not sure he's a Premier League player, I have to say that. And I think there was a lot of chat at the time about keeping hold of him. I know certain fans had kind of maybe latched on to maybe some of the performances where he is throwing his body in the line of like shots, and he's grabbing goals at Burnley, and it, you know, you can say he did do some really, really good things, but it was over a very short period. And I think what you would have seen if he'd have extended that kind of period in the first team, you would have seen weaknesses exposed. You know, Liverpool want to play a certain way. They want a certain centre-half to do a certain thing.
Whether or not he's a Premier League footballer, he's not a footballer who suits the way Liverpool want to play.
No,
that's the conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, and listen, there may be a Premier League club who wants to just sit on the edge of the box and get stuff away. Maybe he could do that, but I think if you want to give him time on the ball, you are going to see those weaknesses, because he's not massively comfortable, don't think, at the ball. He can't clear his lines, you know, he'll put his head in where it hurts, and that's important. So maybe there's a place, you know, maybe if Burnley had stayed up, people used to always say that, didn't he, may suit them. But I think on the turn you can see there's a clear weakness there. And I think even his time at Bournemouth, you know, I listened to some people you were chatting to, Neil, I don't think he was great when he went there. I think he did okay. I think, you know, the language around his time there was he did all right, he was okay, maybe a 6 or 7 out of 10. And he's 25 now. And he's made less than 60 like league starts in his career. So for him, he needs to go somewhere, but he's not fifth choice. He needs to go somewhere and play on a regular basis, because, you know, he's getting to that age now. You know, he's similar age to Joe Gomez. He needs to be playing football week in, week out. Same for Reece Williams as well.
On Gomez then, this interview that he's given, Kieran, the age thing to me is one of the things that stuck out. I'll read the quote. It helps give context, I suppose. Virgil had gone 26 when he arrived, so me looking at what he achieved from that age on, knowing I still have the opportunity to try and have that time ahead of me, is obviously something to chase and aspire towards. This decision of his to sign a new contract, it's a really good interview, because he frames, this is everything I was thinking about. It wasn't as simple as it often is for a fair few of these footballers. You get the impression, it's Liverpool, I want to stay, we're doing brilliantly. He's got some questions to answer and some bits to think about, but the age thing to me is really interesting for a central defender. With the miles he's got on the clock because of a few of the injuries, he is very much of the view, my best days are to come, and it's where he wants to play them. And his decision seems to have been, I want to play them at Liverpool, because you don't get two shots at this.
I think it's a no-brainer for him and for us, to be honest, because his best days are ahead of him. And from Joe Gomez's perspective, he's at the best place for him under the best manager. And he's competing for trophies, and he's going to actually contribute to the team. As I say, in the FA Cups, League Cup games, there's going to be Premier League games where he's going to have to come in because of injuries or whatever it may be. there's definitely room for him in that squad. It's not like you're sort of keeping hold of a player in case. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I do think that given his age, and looking at the age of Van Dijk and Matip, I think there's a strong case for if he sticks about and keeps progressing and stays fit, that him and Konate could be our next partnership as he approaches his 27, 28, 29 in his career. Because he's definitely got the attributes. He's a great player and he gets the club and he can understand the way we play, and we put him a full back in the FA Cup at Forest, and it was a nightmare of a game that day. Crab were up for it, everything was coming down that channel, he just dealt with it. He's not a fullback, and he says this, his best position is centre back. So the fact that he's versatile as well is another thing that he offers. So I'm made up personally, like I wanted to stay.
It's great, it really is. But he himself, he's thinking about peaking, which to me is really interesting. I'm thinking about where he wants to be when he peaks. There's a lot in the whole interview. It really is worth reading, you know, every single word of it's really worth reading, because he is very, very honest about everything that was going through his mind around this, the idea that he could well have moved on. The issue I think he had was if he'd have gone and signed a contract at Aston Villa, one of the clubs linked with him, if he goes to Aston Villa, he's 25 now, if he was to get a move back to another top six club, he'd be 27, 28 by the time that comes around. You know, this is how he has to think about himself and his own future.
Yeah, I was unsure what Joe would do, because I think he's too good to be someone's fourth choice is where I land on it. But I'm made up he's staying, because Liverpool have got great depth now in the squad in terms of that centre-half area. You couldn't ask for better, really. And I think it's easy to forget the levels he got to during his very best before. You know, he's had injuries pretty much through his career, but there's been times in 18, 19 and 19, 20 where you've really seen the very best of Joe Gomez, and he's been able to put, you know, games together, a run of games where he's been at a really, really high level. You know, I think even Van Dijk, when he was speaking to John in one of the mix zones, you know, we talked about how Gomez suits our system. You know, we talk about how Nat Phillips doesn't. Well, Gomez does suit it because he has got pace, he can play on the turn, he is good on the ball. And I think if Liverpool can get Gomez back to anywhere near the levels he was able to demonstrate a couple of years ago, then they've still got one hell of a centre-half on their hands. There's no doubt about it. You know, you talked about Aston Villa there, Neil. He goes there and he plays all the games. He'll play all the games without a doubt, because he's far superior to anything they've got. And I would say for the majority of the teams in this country, he would play all the games and he'd start for his country if he was playing week in, week out. But Joe Gomez, he looks like a lad to me who's happy to take a challenge on, because he's gone through all those injuries. That takes significant mental strength to keep coming back, to keep coming back, to keep coming back. And he's done that time and time again. But he's over an age now where he is going to want to play. Again, he's 25 years of age. And I think he will get more game time this season because of the way the season is. Obviously truncated, the first half is very, very tight in terms of fixtures. And obviously players are coming back at different times. People will pick up injuries and stuff. So I think you will see more of him. But as Kieran said, no, there's a chance anyway. Over the next year or two, he is Liverpool's, or one of Liverpool's first choice centre-half, because, you know, age is on his side. And that partnership he had with Van Dijk, by the way, at its very best, it was sensational. Yeah, it had everything you wanted. It had absolutely everything. Van Dijk, number one, your main man, leading it from a back four perspective, but Joe's on the cover. He's on the cover with loads of pace, and he's great at doing that. He's great at sniffing danger. He's great at smelling danger. You just need to get him a consistent run again. At some point, that's the challenge, because he's got other people in front of him. But once he gets those run of games, I think Liverpool must have spotted something to give him a new contract that actually he can get back to those levels again.
I was about to say then, I think you talk about the partnership with Van Dijk, and looking at Gomez, he's going to want to be the best centre-back he can be, challenge for the biggest honours he can challenge for, and be at a club and work with a manager that he loves. Now, he was working with Van Dijk week in, week out, and Matip and Konate on the training pitch. He's going to be the best centre-half he can be. And if he's at Liverpool and he's contributing to the side, he's going to win medals. It's a bit of a no-brainer for him, isn't it? As I was saying before, it's he goes to Villa, that's fine. He will play every single week, but he's not going to play in the European Cup. He's not going to win loads of medals. And as a football player, that's what you want, isn't it? You know what I mean? He's at Liverpool Football Club challenging for medals, so fair play to Villa.
The peak years thing for me is interesting for Wad. I think as football moves, there's always this desire, I think, amongst us as supporters as well, not least because we get excited about footballers early. We get excited by Harvey Elliott, we get excited by, you know, even Cade Gordon to a sense. You get excited by footballers, go all the way back to Michael Owen, Robbie Fowler. When they break through at 18, 19, that's when they excite you. Gomez has in the interview, makes the point he's now the third longest sort of stay at Liverpool and amongst everyone at the squad because he came so young. But footballers, the vast majority of them, still, it hasn't changed, peak between 25 and 30. That's still literally footballers, whatever position on the pitch. Salah has peaked between 25 and 30 with Liverpool. Mane peaked between 25 and 30. You know, you can go right the way through, you know, almost everyone. The peak then, how long that peak sustains for is a question around, for instance, Henderson and Thiago this season. But that's the peak, and that's where I think we are with Gomez. We think he is, he's moving into those peak years, I think, and that means that this could be even better to come. And as Ian says, he was brilliant enough with Van Dijk.
Exactly, that partnership, you know, I don't forget it easily. And I think, you know, it can be easy to forget because there's been that big gap, but the fact that he did it over such a long period of time, I think gives you that reassurance that, you know, we're not talking about a player who can come in for a few games and then shows a bit of inconsistency. He was really at the top level. And I remember games where, you know, we were talking about him on shows like this, you know, being better than Van Dijk and being superior in some facets of the game. So there's a level there that he can definitely get to again. I don't think the injuries are going to be a big problem and that you'd hope they're not going to be. But even from the club's perspective, you know, you're talking about if he were to have gone this summer, you're talking about replacing someone, like you're saying, going into those peak years. And, you know, just generally, there's a real kind of shortage of centre-halves like that, that you can just readily find and bring in and have that confidence. They did that with Konate when they saw the opportunity, but getting someone at that age to come in and the kind of long-serving thing is really important, I think, because, you know, he quietly seems like a really switched-on guy. He quietly seems like, you know, someone who's helped kind of form the culture in the club. And it's important you have these figures that have been there from the start, who are there as long as possible to keep this going when, you know, inevitably the likes of Matip will get old. And maybe in a couple of years move on. You want players there who've been there, you know, been there in the glory years at the beginning and are able to kind of elongate these glory years to the next iteration of this Liverpool side. And he's captained the side before. He's got those attributes. And I think, you know, he's probably thinking himself, who better to kind of go into these peak years and than next to Virgil van Dijk and learn off him and continue to sort of grow with all these great centre-halves. And there's clearly the games Liverpool have proved that they can play literally every game in a season and they want to do that consistently. So the opportunities are there.
Maturity is funny around the squad as a whole. Ian, you've got the players who are clearly very mature, James Milner being the obvious example of that, but also if you're able to look at Henderson and Thiago in terms of what they've achieved through their career, Thiago with more clubs than just Liverpool, obviously, but Henderson here as well. Van Dijk now obviously falls into that category, but we've ended up in a situation where there's actually a group of younger players who now have had those sort of life-altering experiences. Trent Alexander-Arnold's one, Joe Gomez is another, of being at the absolute peak of the sport while still in their certainly early 20s to mid-20s. And now in Gomez's case, that maturity, I think it matters. They've been around this. You can even throw Naby Keita into this in a way. You can even throw Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain into this in a way that they've been around the camp whilst all this has happened. They know what it is to be part of contributing on and off the field to get to that level. Liverpool have got that knowledge innate, and I think another reason why Liverpool have been eager to extend this contract is you don't throw that away on a 25-year-old if he's already got all that in the bank.
No, 100% agree. I think, you know, you can't underestimate, I think, the value that someone like Jürgen Klopp will put into that as well, in terms of, you know, having these players where they've immersed themselves in what he wants to do over, you know, the last, what, 6-7 years or so. That's massive to him, I think. You know, understanding the culture feels massive for this Liverpool team and the Liverpool squad. And I think you're right, in terms of the balance, I think you always want to have that, you know, that blend, where there is, you know, the experience that you just mentioned there, but then you've got those younger players coming through. You know, Alan Hansen always gets loads of stick for the comments he made about, you know, you don't win anything with kids and stuff. But what he was driving at there was that, you know, you can't fill a team full of kids. You know, Gary Neville will always kind of defend those comments a little bit and say, well, actually, there was loads of experience in there as well. There was people like Brian McClair and Mark Hughes and Steve Bruce, Schmeichel, etc. So you've got to get the balance right and stuff. And I think Liverpool have done particularly well because it feels like a nicely balanced squad now. You know, there's those younger players coming through. I think we'll touch on, you know, the likes of Carvalho and Elliot and stuff. And there's still Curtis Jones. You forget how young he is still because he's been around for a little bit. You know, Joe Gomez is still a relatively young footballer, 25. He's still got loads of years left. But then they have got those older heads, you know, the Thiagos, the Hendersons. You've mentioned Milner, who I think, you know, whilst I wouldn't expect to see loads of James Milner this season unless there's massive injuries. I'm talking in terms of starting games. I don't think you can, again, you can underplay just what he does around the squad, around the dressing room, the culture. And I think it's easily dismissed that. I think people can, you know, sit on a phone or on a keyboard and put things out about James Milner and slag him off and stuff. And don't get me wrong, there will be times when I've been on shows and said, I don't want to see James Milner start this football match. I think that's fine. But in terms of what he does for the culture and the team and the messages that he'll convey to the players, that, that will be coming from the manager. But people like him and Henderson will have a real kind of, you know, stronghold in the dressing room. Others as well, like Van Dijk, that's massively important to a successful squad.
Okay, there is a lot up for grabs. We've seen it so far in pre-season, more to come on that, but for now here it is, whether you're watching on video or listening on audio, here is some of the highlights from when we were in Bangkok and Singapore, our conversations with Jurgen Klopp, Kostas Tsimikas and Billy Hogan.
When you say that about the play, players who experience it, do you think stuff like, for instance, when they get to see the parade, the parade's live on Sky, it's on the news all the way through the day, it's beamed all over the world, do you think that the players then all over the world, I think I'd love to play for them, imagine playing for them?
For sure, I can't see now any player who watches a parade of a team, to be honest. I wouldn't watch a parade of anybody else, when they win or lose or whatever. Why would you watch that? So, but I know what you mean, but it's more important, it was more important for our players. It was the most special experience, and Henry said this was I couldn't have imagined, but it was the best day of my life, and we all felt it like that. Look, when we speak about each other, like fans, teams, stuff like this, we all love the connection we have. But it somehow works, and yes, we proved that all 3 days, blah, 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 we give our all, you give your all these kind of things. But then we all know as well, if we don't win, I'm still a nice guy. But after a while, people say, yeah, thank you very much. But this situation was so special because we won, lost the Champions League final the night before. And then coming together and appreciating and celebrating us and our relationship and celebrating our view on things was the most extraordinary experience of my life, I have to say. And I had not 500 parades, but I had a few.
Yeah.
And this was the most special ever, ever, ever. And I can't see it being topped in the future, because we all get praise when we win, but getting what we got there, love and all these things after we lost a big final, was incredibly special.
Was it, as part of that, the thing I keep coming back to with this journey you've been on with us, with the group of players, and in this summer where Sadio goes, was there a part of you on that parade where you're thinking to yourself, could be Sadio's last one? You probably have a bit of a sense of which direction he's going to go in. You know, Taki's last one, or only one at that point, but he played such a part. For you to let those players go, but to get to share those emotional experiences, it must be quite complicated, because in the back of your mind, you must be thinking, this is incredible, I've got these people. But it must be a bit bittersweet somewhere. For instance, certainly someone like Sadio, who's underpinned so much of what's been brilliant.
I knew it will be the last. So it's not that I had a sense, I knew. So of course that feels strange, but good as well. So it's like, if then it's a farewell. So Divock enjoyed it like crazy on a car, and he knew as well it will be his last. So these kind of things. So it's not about that. It's like when we are now already a while together. So it's my seventh season. And that's really strange, but we cannot just keep the things like they are.
Yeah.
So we cannot just say, it's great. And the same team and getting older, these kind of things. You have to make changes. We do constantly.
I do want to talk about the FA Cup final, because it was a big day for you. Big smile when you think about it. I don't know how many penalties you've taken before, but you stepped up, you slotted it, and that was the big moment. What are your memories of that day and that moment?
The only thing I remembered, I don't remember a lot from when I celebrated, to be honest. I was a little bit stressed when I walked to take the ball, but to be honest, I never shot penalty in my life. It was my first one. It was unbelievable. I think this is the best memories I have in the football. This penalty, this trophy I gave to the team. For me, it was something special. Hopefully, I can live it again.
Yeah.
I can have this feeling again.
was absolutely unique, and the way I ran after to our fans, I saw everybody was very, very happy. Everybody wanted 100% this cup, and I'm very, very glad to bring it back to Liverpool.
Craig's normally climbing on me when we celebrate. See, after, yeah, you'll see him, and I'll be like underneath him while he's like climbing up on top of me after watching. But it was some celebration. You know, we were in the stands in Wembley, and you know, you guys come over, and it's like you guys all want to celebrate with us all together, really, you know, rather than like in your huddle with the team who've won it. The first thought is always, yeah, let's do this together. You know, the DJ plays one kiss, and then it's let's go for all of us.
Yeah, this is so. This one kiss also gives you like motivation, you know, to celebrate more. Of course, me also, I climbed to the back of Adrian. Of course, it was mad.
Joined by Billy Hogan, Liverpool's CEO, to discuss first and foremost what went on in Paris at the Champions League final. Billy, we've reached a stage now where on Wednesday we're expecting the release of a report that's really quite damning of the French authorities, of what's gone on, done by the French authorities. And I think this is an important point, that a lot of the investigative work that we've seen so far has been done by the French authorities about what went on themselves. Mm.
Yeah, well, I think at this point we're not sure what it'll say, and I guess kind of going back to the beginning, you know, we've been, as a club, adamant about the fact that an investigation needs to happen into what happened that night in Paris, and I think this is a part of that. And to be perfectly honest, we haven't been involved in this investigation and in what the French authorities have done over the course of the last several weeks. So obviously we're very interested in what's going to come out. But we still are, you know, feel strongly that the UEFA independent investigation needs to happen. That is beginning. And so this is an important step. And again, I guess we'll just have to react to what ultimately is put out.
Is the club as a whole now happy with the makeup of that UEFA independent panel? Or is that still something which you've had a lot of back and forth with UEFA about?
Yeah, well, we have had a lot of back and forth. I think from our perspective, we put forward some people that we thought would be appropriate to include in the panel. And thankfully, some of those people were chosen. Mm-hmm. So I think right now, based on the announcement, which was a week ago, in terms of the folks that are actually on that panel, we think that's something that, you know, we're encouraged by. But the next step really is, now there's going to be a face-to-face meeting that we're going to have in the coming weeks, and get a chance to sit down with the key people in that panel and really discuss what the process is, what the timelines are, and really making sure that this is not about speed, it's about making sure that we do it the right way, and that's really the next step in this process.
Thanks to Jurgen Kostas and Billy and everyone who helped sort all of that out in every single way. If you watched it on a video, it's beautifully shot by Dave Rawcliffe, who very much came through for us from Propaganda Photos. So a massive thank you to Dave as well around all of that, and everyone who helped arrange those little interviews, those conversations. We had a lot of fun in Bangkok and Singapore. It was good to do all the events, see people, so on and so forth. And if you came to any of them, as I said earlier on, thank you very much for doing that as well. Let's talk about what's up for grabs then, Keo. I feel like bigger games, I'm not going to say the big games, but bigger games, we know all what those will be. Difficult away games, you never know when one of those is going to emerge. European games with a bit on the line, it feels to me as though we can say with certainty the goalkeeper will be the goalkeeper. Van Dijk will start. I think if he's fit in those games now, Thiago starts. And then I think there's two slots up for grabs alongside Salah. I actually feel a bit like everything else is going to be game to game, almost a little bit up for grabs from a Liverpool point of view. Fabinho maybe, but Henderson's intriguingly started six in both of the pre-season friendlies, and he is the captain. And I think that the manager wouldn't be shy about using him in that position in any given game. Everything else does feel to me, and this is as much about the sort of the depth as anything else, it does feel to me as though almost every other position in a bigger game, I'm not just saying the obvious Champions League home and away, feels as though almost anyone could slot in, and that's what they're playing for at the minute in pre-season from day one against Fulham.
I think that's what the manager's gone for. Not that we've had major bodies in or out, but we've definitely refreshed, and that was the idea, wasn't it, to refresh this squad and refresh, you know, the feel around the place in terms of, like, last season took a lot out of us, and we felt like, you know, we needed a fresh go this season. And I do think that we're strong in all departments. I think that this is the strongest Liverpool team I've seen for a while. I just wonder how the season's going to start. Do we hit the ground running? Because I think we do need to hit the ground running. When you do refresh and you change a few bodies here and there, like, I'm not saying I have any sort of doubts about Liverpool this season. I am a little bit nervous. I don't know whether that's just because
missing Sadio in a sense as well.
Yeah, that's it. Like, and as excited as I am about Nunes on paper, that front three of Mane, Salah and Diaz was mouthwatering. However, we weren't scoring in finals, as we've all had the conversations. So yeah, we've refreshed, and I am slightly nervous about the season, as I always am, because I care about Liverpool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just want to carry on beating everyone every week and going and do what we've done last season, but finish it properly. So yeah, but we're strong in all departments, and I do feel that the centre halves. We talked about Davies and Nat Phillips and stuff, and no disrespect to them, I'm just glad that sort of all passed us now, and we've got a real strong selection of centre halves. The midfield looks strong. And there's a competition for places, which is not a bad thing. Like,
it feels like the competition for places is everywhere, Ian. Like I said a minute ago, I don't even feel, and I've got, I don't mean to be sort of daft about this, I've got Fabinho in my all-time Liverpool 11, holding midfield. You know, that's where he is as far as I'm concerned. He occupies that position. But I don't even feel as though that's necessarily going to be quite as nailed down as maybe it has been in previous seasons. Could be proven wrong. But it does seem to me as though, bar those places I've just said, the goal run right the way through the spine, as it were, the goalkeeper, Van Dijk, Thiago and Salah, Liverpool have got to go to, for instance, West Ham away. If all four of them are fit, I expect all four of them to be on the pitch. Obviously, the two fullbacks are in there as well. But then the other positions, who plays next to Van Dijk, other midfield positions, and who starts alongside Salah, genuinely, I couldn't tell you right now who it is.
Yeah, that's kind of where you want to be, isn't it, in terms of having a squad where actually, regardless of who plays, you know, it still feels like there's a strong 11 taken to the pitch. So I think the Fabinho points, I would expect them, if fit, to play in all of Liverpool's what I would call big games. You know, if there's a big game. I know you made a point about you wouldn't have started him in the Champions League final. We start him in a big game. I think him at number six, I think he's unrivaled really in the squad. I think Henderson can do bits there, and I do think I quite like it sometimes when Jordan plays there in certain games, because I think he does change it up a little bit. He offers something slightly different, he plays it in a different way, and I think that's fine. But I think if you were going to City, for instance, or you're going to Chelsea,
they're the biggest games I'm sort of
or even if even if it was a even a decent team at home in the Champions League, I want to see Fabinho in that game. You know, Liverpool played Milan last season, I want to see Fabinho start that match. But they will have to take a view on it, because the games come thick and fast, and I think, you know,
and that's more what I mean.
Yeah, Henderson doesn't let you down in big games. You know, he's played there enough times, and I think, you know, people will criticise him because he doesn't do it like Fabinho does it, but I do think he brings something slightly different. He does change the kind of the direction of travel quite quickly. You know, he's got that switch of pass and stuff, which I think gets Liverpool on the front foot nicely. I think there are lots of different options in it. Listen, the manager would despise me because I would like to add one more in midfield. And I know he hates the idea. He said to you, he hates the idea. And that's fair.
Fucking furious with you, he is. You know, he's furious with you.
I'm fine with it.
Can knock around to yours tonight. Yeah. He's got time on his hands now, a couple of days till Leipzig.
And I'm fine with it because I would like to do one more. You know, you don't want to criticise individual footballers, but I do feel like Chamberlain's time at the club, and I know he's showed one or two flashes in pre-season, there's only been a couple of games, and people who've watched them have said, you know, he looks like he started them well, but he gets the injury. And I just feel like he's one who, if you talk about footballers needing a new challenge, it feels like he's at an age where he needs a new challenge. He could just do with it for his own kind of, for his own well-being, really, to go and play football consistently. And you have always got that thing in the back of your mind where he's going to pick up injuries and stuff. So I'd like to get one more in there. But I'm really intrigued to see how Cavallo starts the season. You know, we look good at Fulham, but it's a step up, so you've got to take that into consideration. I don't watch loads and loads of the pre-season. I used to, but I'll just dip in and out now. But by all accounts, Harvey Elliott's looked nice and sharp. And I think he surprised everyone last season by starting Elliott. But I think it's fair to say people aren't going to be shocked if he's starting that first one at Fulham.
Elliott is one in the pre-season games who's looked like he is laying, staking a serious claim. Henderson at six is interesting. He plays Tyler Morton ahead of Henderson in the game where Morton and Henderson are on the pitch at the same time. Supposedly Morton's been doing more stuff at eight anyway, the manager said, but it's interesting to me that he uses that as a rationale to have Henderson there. Two, it's felt to me like Henderson six and Elliott are the midfield lads who've been laying down markers from what I've seen, not just because Henderson gets the goal. They look like the ones who are laying down. I'm committed to this position, committed to the fact that I feel as though I can play in this team. I think Elliott's looked great.
Yeah, he's looked brilliant. And I think, you know, a lot of what the manager's been saying over the last few months, and it surprised me a little bit because I feel like it's something fans like to talk about more, and you don't really see it from within football clubs. But he's been talking a lot about being more unpredictable in the starting lineups, and you know the idea of losing a Mane, where you don't just get a player in and replace him. You do a few different things, and you have a few different facets from different people's game that comes in. And I think you're going to see the likes of Elliott and Carvalho start a lot more. And I think especially this first batch of games, you're going to see if someone come in. I think that who's sort of been like an Elliott, who's been geared up through pre-season, who's probably been told in May that look,
Who didn't go away in the summer to any international. Yeah.
Yeah, Curtis Jones, someone like that who've probably had a little word with the manager, and the manager's told them, look, these first few couple months, you really, you know, we're going to target that for you as a time to give you a run. And I think, you know, that's how he's going to go about this season, with the intensity, with the little break in the middle, with the World Cup and everything. So it's important that players have that momentum and have that rhythm. And also there's a thing of, you know, he's not silly. He knows that the tag attached to Darwin Núñez and the pressure that's going to come with it on him. And you don't know how players are going to respond until they're put in that situation. But I think there's enough confidence in other players in the squad, other members of the squad, that they can kind of bridge that goal gap that maybe Mane has left at the beginning of the season. Salah hitting the ground running would be huge, I think, just because of the end of last season. You know, it just shuts up anything on that. And, you know, there's loads to be excited about. I think the Carvalho thing gets me the most excited, because I just feel like he might be that player that we all thought Naby Keita was when he came in terms of the style and in terms of what he can bring to the side. And I think that fearlessness he seems to have at this age, and that freshness is really kind of exciting, and I think it could work really well with the balance of this team already.
Carvalho off the left side of the midfield three is a bit different. You know, you think about Gini there, pretty just solid, you know what I mean? I don't mean that to disparage anyone, solid helps. Thiago, Keita when they play there, Milner to an extent, although I think Milner does make more darting runs forward, ironically, given his age in a sense, the way in which he's perceived. Curtis, when he's played there, solid is what you would say. Carvalho looks as though Liverpool might be prepared to sacrifice a little bit of that left-hand side of the midfield solidity and have the option of maybe a bit more creativity on that side, take a couple more risks.
He excites me, this kid, to be honest. I didn't know too much about him. I know that we signed him about 15 times. I kept seeing Liverpool about to sign Carvalho. But as I normally do when I don't understand the player too much, I go on YouTube and watch a drum and bass track and I'm scoring worldies, and he looked really good. But I didn't know how much he was going to figure. I didn't know whether he was going to come in, be loaned back out, whether he was going to come in, go on the 20th. He looks like similar to Elliott. Jürgen really rated this kid. And I think similar to Elliott last season, when he started on the opening day, and we all went, he started Naby Elliott, you know. I think you might see a couple of games, as you say earlier on in this season, where he's told Alex Carvalho, you're going to play. And what you're saying before, having so many options and stuff, there may be a situation where you see him operating there.
I'm surprised, but you know, it was briefed. Neil Jones said they expect to see him as a front three option. He's not been near there actually so far in pre-season, and he's been deployed a little bit deeper. Everyone is excited about him. The players themselves seem excited about him, seem excited with him. That always bodes well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it is always hard to judge a player when he's playing in the Championship, because that is, you know, that step up's massive. You know, you've seen it countless times where, you know, players, you know, will bang constantly in the Championship, and then the minute they come up, you know, it dries up. And obviously he's not coming as a centre forward, and you know, Neil did talk about him in those terms, and it has surprised me a little bit, because he seemed quite wedded to the fact that he will be a front three player, and maybe he will be one day. But you know, Jürgen Klopp's got this habit, hasn't he, of just playing people in slightly different positions than what you think, and doing really well with it. It's almost like they're thinking about it and stuff. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he's a little bit deeper. And I think he looks like a really good one-touch, two-touch player. You know, as you said, the players speak really highly of him. You know, Curtis was talking him up as well the other day in the mix zone and stuff. So, yeah, loads to be excited about. I'm not sure you'll see him kind of from day one. I think, you know, Liverpool, again, you know, Jürgen's not against just kind of feeding him in as and when. But then you will get a player who just completely knocks out the park, and you almost can't not start him because he's that good. But Liverpool have got options in there. I think the challenge will be, just keeping some of those big hitters ticking over and fit and firing and available for those biggest games that we talked about before. You know, you mentioned Thiago. You know, if you get him at his very best, I mean, there's very few footballers who can operate at his level, certainly with the ball. He's sensational, and you've got to look after him, because I think there's no European games just in the first kind of few weeks, but then they do start coming thick and fast, and Liverpool are going to have to...
And when there is a Bundesliga game.
Yeah, so Liverpool are going to have to pick and choose when they play some of these players, but as I say, the manager knows what he's doing.
Moving to the back line, it's been interesting for whether it's been Konate and Van Dijk together, predominantly saying that that's one of the places that's up for grabs. Liverpool, though, committed so far to Konate and Van Dijk twice. That might change. Leipzig on the horizon on Thursday, and I think that'll be 45-45 rather than 30s. But that said, you know, that is a position we talked about Gomez earlier on. Matip as well has shown everything he's shown for the club. Someone will start next to Van Dijk against Fulham, and the job of all of them is to try to have them be that footballer between now and then.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, you know, we talked about who you play in the bigger games, and I think the one thing you get with a squad that's been through what they have last season and, you know, lots of the players, you know, challenging up there in the last three, four years, is that you've got lots of players with experience in big games. You know, Konate gets thrown in, you know, that United game at Old Trafford and is, you know, looks really comfortable when he really didn't have any right to, considering the experience he had before in terms of how much game time he had. And then that Champions League final, he was, you know, he's probably one of the best players on the pitch. He was unbelievable, I thought, and did everything you'd want from a Liverpool centre half. And I think he gives a manager, you know, a really good problem. And I would be tempted to get him in there. And I feel like he's at that point now where he seems to be very comfortable with what he's being asked to do, and he seems to be very, very much embedded in this team. I loved how he talked about the parade and all that kind of stuff. He feels like he's really kind of plugged into what this team is about. And I think, you know, that healthy competition that there seems to be there is usually a problem for a lot of clubs, but I feel like for us this is exactly what we need.
I'll come back to you on that before I'll bring Keogh in on his concerns and Diogo Jota in a second, but I want to come back to you on that. Gomez goes out of his way to say it. Konate, when he talked about the parade and all that sort of stuff, it's interesting he was actually done the interviews and the little bits and pieces. It is the feeling, isn't it, with the four of them? Like, firstly, I suspect the other three who aren't Van Dijk all think Van Dijk's amazing, yeah, which helps massively. But the others, you get the impression there is, they know there's competition for places, but they also know there's opportunities likely. But also, it all feels really, really healthy. And Gomez goes out of his way to emphasise that, and Konate just appears to be in love with every moment that he's getting to live at Liverpool.
Yeah, definitely. There's almost a culture within the Liverpool kind of centre back little squad, and I think that it comes from Van Dijk, probably that calmness. And I think a lot of them have got that experience of, well, you know, because of how this team likes to play and because of how what they're asked to do, you know, it is intense, it is a lot of work, and they understand from the manager that when the way the manager likes to operate, when you are on the team and you've put in a good run of games, you earn your spot and you stay in, and you will get that opportunity. I think each one of them are confident that they're able to play a run of games and they're able to keep at a really high level, and they've all shown it. And I think you can't forget Matip, you can't forget what he's done. But, you know, inevitably there's going to have to be, with his age and with Van Dijk's age, there's going to have to be a little bit of a changing of the guard that we don't notice, and that's how you want it done. You don't want to be noticing these things, but you kind of hope it naturally happens over the next couple of years.
We do need to start strong, and we need to start fast. We saw that in the 2019-2020 season when we have the big battle with City. We flip around, they drop points in game two, and we all felt like it was April because we'd won our first two, and they only took 4 points from the first two, which is, you know, it's the way it is now. My big concern is the Jota injury. I think Jota, in a couple of senses, has been mildly forgotten, KO, but I think also within that, you look at Jota last season, he bangs, but they're also important goals. A lot of goals to go 1-0, a lot of goals to go equalise, a lot of goals to go.
Penalty really keeps us cool.
Yeah, a lot of what he does in big moments, I think, and I think Firmino's looked bright, and it's interesting thinking about the two of them, but Jota contributed key moments in the first sort of two-thirds of that campaign, and it would be great if we could have him from the start of the season, because if he can do the same again, it gives everyone else, I still include Diaz in this, time just to absolutely find their role in attack.
Yeah, I think the Diaz signing took a little bit of light off Jota, in the sense of when he first come, he surprised us all, because we knew, we could see he had ability and stuff, but we didn't know how big of a Liverpool player he was going to be, and it took a couple of games and everyone was like, he's a Liverpool player, he's a proper Liverpool player. And as you said, the shine come off him a little bit when Diaz come in, because Diaz just is so great to watch. But there's moments last season, I said that penalty, where I think if he doesn't score that penalty, Chelsea have a chance to win the FA Cup, and he's just so cool. And it's delivering performances and moments like that. So
Yeah, it's. I don't know the full extent of the injury, to be honest. I mean,
he's at least behind them on pre-season, if you know what I mean. Yeah, you know what the manager's like for that. So he's lost a couple of weeks of pre-season, basically. He's only done one training session so far. So the manager will have concerns about that.
Yeah, that's not great, because, as you said then, it's running from the day one now. I mean, it used to be get after Christmas and stuff, and you'd sort of see like where the points are at. We know this margin's going to be a point or two. So there's no room for error from the start. You want everybody available from the start. So it is frustrating, and hopefully he is ready for the start of the season, because I think he's going to have a big season for us.
We need him to. Firmino's looked bright. I was lucky enough to get to see him in person in training. Looked really, really bright in person in training. But whilst I think if Firmino could return to his game-in, game-out form of 2019-2020, where you forget the number of big goals he scores, goals to win games, goals away at Palace, away at Wolves, you know, there's a run of games where Firmino gets really significant contributions, Ian. You forget that at times because you're almost blinded by the other numbers here and there of other footballers. Contributions aren't just about amassing huge numbers of them. It's simultaneously key moments. Jota and Firmino both got that in the locker, but we could do with one of them coming to the party for the first 5-6 games of the season, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the Jota one's a blow because I think he's already been ruled out of the Community Shield, hasn't he? Which, you know, if he's not going to feature in that, then there's absolutely no chance you're going to see him anywhere near Fulham, because he is going to need some time to get back up to speed. I think Firmino, it's quite hard to judge him because I think, no, let's have it right, he's been absolutely phenomenal for this football club. That is not in question. But I think over the last maybe 18 months or so, you've not only seen, maybe actually going back a little bit further than as well, you've seen times where his form's been not quite where you want it to be. And then you've now started to see the injuries as well become part of his kind of makeup where he's missing games. And that's a shame. Because
I don't think he's been the footballer he was since the COVID interruption.
Yeah.
I think you can genuinely almost draw a line there, because he does do more in the 2019-20 season. Scores the goal to win the Club World Cup, for instance. You know, there's more of that. And then there is the COVID interruption. And then there's, you know, the moment when he grabs one in front of 2,000 people against Tottenham late in the game, which felt like it might be a bit of a watershed for him. But it's never sort of snowballed into overall performance, in part because of injury, like you're saying. And I think that's, Liverpool could firstly do with him being fully fit, but secondly, if he could get back, even if it was just for the first 10 games of this season, he'd have a really important part to play, I think.
I agree. And I think you've also got to look at partnerships as well. And I think someone like Mohamed Salah really enjoys playing with Firmino. I think that's really, really important to say. I think, you know, there's been a little bit of narrative about, you know, has he enjoyed it as much when Mane got shifted central and Diaz come in. I mean, that's hard to really know. I think only, you know, behind the scenes they'll know that. But what we do know is he's had a really, really good partnership with Firmino, and it's flourished. And I think, you know, the unselfishness to Firmino really plays into what Mo likes, where he's, you know, he's always looking to play him, he's always looking to give him the ball and stuff. You know, he's an absolute dream to play with. You can imagine anyone who plays with Firmino, they probably go on record as saying, my God, what a footballer, because he just does all the selfless stuff. And, you know, he's willing to kind of drop in and do bits in midfield. And then actually, you know, we can chip in with those really important goals, as you said, Neil. It's just hard to know whether you can ever get him back to those really great days. And obviously age becomes a thing as well, but he's not, you know, he's not as young as he was. And what is he now, 31? So not old by any stretch, but actually, you know, peak Firmino's probably gone now. But you'll still see flashes, I'm sure, because there's still a footballer in there, absolutely. There's still a footballer with loads of
ability. Footballers like him, though, who do find another sort of couple of years after 30. It's not like it's ever been about pace. That's the interesting thing.
A lot of it's up there, isn't it, with Firmino? He's certainly got that. I just think the injuries, you've got, you know, they've kind of punctured the season and stuff in recent times where you've not been able to get him a rhythm of games, and he's come back and it's bounced off him a little bit and he's not been quite up to speed and stuff. So, you know, there's that, but I don't think anyone's sitting here panicking if he's starting at Fulham, because he's still way above that level. And I think, you know, you're not quite sure what you're going to get from a new signing such as Darwin Nunes, because I think everyone's expected him to have a great career. You know, Liverpool don't get these things wrong very often, but it might take him a little bit of time. But he could also start at Fulham and get a brace, because, you know, that's a really nice fixture there, I think. You know, don't get me wrong, sometimes you'll say, well, playing a newly promoted team at home, it can be a little bit of an awkward one. But I don't really see it that way. I think it'll play into Liverpool's hands a little bit, and I fully expect Liverpool to be able to go there, regardless of who's starting, and actually absolutely sweep them aside.
Okay. Leipzig should see them do 45-45. Fuad being 30 so far. You would think it kicks from here. They all got a wedding to go to with the weekend.
Yeah, looked great, didn't it?
Didn't it just?
They all look good.
Didn't it just? Yeah, indeed. I reckon we'd have all fitted in, by the way. I want to be crystal clear. We could
big fan of that Chamberlain jacket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The shades. The captain is maturing into a hell of a good-looking young man, by the way. It is worth pointing out. Not dissimilar to his predecessor. It's fair to say in that regard as well. But, you know, they all looked well-dressed. They all looked sharp.
Yeah,
but they've got Firmino to deal with as well. Sorry, they've got Leipzig to deal with as well. 45 and 45, I think, for that one, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think now you're hitting the stage where it ramps up a bit, doesn't it? And I think you get a little bit more kind of a clues of how the manager maybe goes for Fulham and what he wants to do. Because I don't think, you know, if you do have a Jota back before then, I don't think you risk it at this stage. There's no good can come of that, really. I think he's confident in what he has. And, you know, you'd expect to see a two fairly strong teams. You'll see less of the kids, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
And, you know, the squad is in that place now where they can go out and put out two teams like that. And I'd be interested to see Firmino, which of the 45 he plays with Salah,
yeah,
whether he plays with Diaz. Because I feel like that's also another one, that a relationship that could blossom, that Firmino and Diaz one as well. And I think, you know, Diaz is a player that, you know, obviously came and was great, and we saw, you know, the flashes of brilliance and then consistency as well, actually. But I feel like he's on the cusp of being that player where everything he hits goes in. Yeah. I think he can be that player, and this season we might not see it straight away, but I feel like the manager is almost counting on that kind of coming in sooner rather than later.
The gluing of them, I think, is the important part at this stage, because Diaz has only got a small number of Liverpool games in the grand scheme of things. Darwin himself hasn't got any at this point. You know, you want to see them be able to all link up with one another. And I think that's going to be the challenge now, from now until the end of the pre-season for the manager. We've talked up the centre-half situation. He could pick anyone, if we're honest, at Fulham. And even Palace, the game after. We know what the full-backs can do. We've talked about the midfielders. And even if, like Ian, you'd want one more, they all know how to play with each other. The question where about them all playing with each other is just in that front three, I think.
I think, similar to you, Ian, I don't watch every minute of pre-season anymore. I drift in and out. But what I have seen, we've definitely changed the way we play with the number nine, and I like it. And it's different going into a Premier League game or a first group game of a Champions League, and it's got to happen as opposed to being in pre-season and trying these things. But we've got the best manager in the world, and I do think if anyone's going to make a new front three work, it's going to be Jurgen Klopp, because he's done it time and time and again. Like, and as I say, even if Nunez doesn't start every game and Jota's not available, similar to the way Salah loves playing with Firmino, Diaz will. I can see the chemistry there already. Do you know what I mean?
You can indeed. Listen, all to come against Leipzig. We may well hot mic it. We'll confirm that later in the week, but we're looking into it right now if we can or can't. So we will let you know on that. Excellent stuff indeed. Thank you very much to Fuad, to Keo, and to Ian. It has been the Anfield Wrap, produced by Andy Heaton. I've been Neil Atkinson. This pre-season is still a long way from being over, but the Charity Shield feels oddly on the horizon as well. But who's going to that? There's the game at Anfield the next day. Sports Social Podcast Network.